Genesis 21.
We covered more in Genesis than Romans study. We covered
a lot in Genesis.
And we're not done yet. Okay, let's do a quick catch-up. What we're trying to find here as it pertains to Romans is that Paul is going to continue his argument about circumcision, about particular rites by the time we get to chapters 6 and 7, and then 8's all about God's absolute sovereignty, and by the time we get to 9 through 11, it's about God's dealings with Israel. None of that's going to make sense to you if you don't understand the Israelitish point of view. When they were reading the letter the first time, Paul was using a lot of sort of code language that they would understand automatically because they knew all the stuff we're now learning. So Paul could make quick references to the promises of the fathers. And once he said the promises of the fathers, that short phrase took them back to everything we're now learning. So unless you can understand it the way they understood it, you're not in fact understanding it. Was that a good sentence? So unless you can understand the first century Hebrew approach to these scriptures and the Pauline approach and the Hebrew history, you can't get the full weight of Paul's argument. So rather than go forward with Romans, we're backtracking in order to get some of this Hebrew history. And what we're primarily trying to understand is the promise of the fathers. He's going to make several references to that. Now, I'll jump ahead and say that whenever, and get this locked in your head, you got to get this locked in your head. Let's talk for a second about what a Jew is and who a Jew is. Let's clear this up for a moment. Israel, the nation of Israel, are the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Those three. If you aren't directly descended from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you're not in fact Israel. Everybody who was born from Abraham was a Hebrew. He was the first Hebrew. Hebrew simply means sojourner, wanderer, person without a home. When he was told by God to leave Ur of the Chaldees and start traveling, and that God would show him where to settle, he became a wanderer, a sojourner, a guy without a home. His people after him continued to be wanderers, travelers without a home, until after the Egyptian captivity when they were brought back and finally settled in Israel. When they were settled in Israel and given a home, at that point they were not, quote-unquote, sojourners without a home, except that they were then scattered again and scattered all over the world. So they continue to be Hebrews, travelers. However, Abraham had two sons. We're going to get to the second son today. Last week, we hit the first son, who was Ishmael. Ishmael was a kid that he had with Hagar, who was a handmaid. After he had that first kid, God told him, once the second kid came, that he's going to cast off that woman and cast off her son. God met with her and said, yes, you're going to have 12 nations come out of your son. But we saw last week, he's going to be a wild man. His hand is always going to be against every other man. He's going to be constantly at war. And he continues to be to this day a problem to the seed that came through Isaac. God is going to say specifically to Abraham this week, through Isaac shall thy seed be called. Now that seed word is a really, really important factor of this whole thing. He came to Abraham and said, start walking. He said, I'll tell you when you're there. He got to Canaan. He said, I'm going to give you all of this land. That was the first promise. I'm going to give you all of this land. As far as you can see, as far as your foot touches, as far as you can look, I'm going to give you all this land of Canaan, despite the fact that the Canaanites were living there. The Canaanites, by the way, were descendants of Ham. Ham was one of the three sons of Noah. The direct descendants of Ham were the Canaanites who lived in the land of Canaan. Shem was the blessed line of Noah through whom Abram came. So when Abram came to Canaan, the Canaanites, the descendants of Ham, were living there. And God said, I'm going to give you this land that currently belongs to the Canaanites, but it's going to become a Shemite promise. Get the picture? So that curse that Noah put on Ham was played out in the people of Canaan when they had a land that they then lost to the Shemites. When he got there, the first promise was, I'm going to give you this land. The second promise was, though he had no kids and though he was only 70 years old, you're going to have a son, and through that son, through that seed, the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. Through that seed, there are going to be countless descendants, so countless. If you could count the stars, if you could count the sands of the sea, then you'd be able to count the offspring of Abraham. So there's the second promise. First promise, you're going to get this land. It's yours and your descendants. Second promise was, you're going to have descendants like the stars and the sands of the sea. The third promise was, through your seed, quote-unquote seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. The fourth promise was, you will possess the gates of your enemies. Whatever that means, you will possess the gates of your enemies. The fifth promise was, those that bless you, I'll bless. Those that curse you, I will also curse. So when the Hebrew, when an Israelite, when a Jewish person to this day uses the phrase, the promises to the fathers, or the promises made to the fathers, or the fathers' promises, that's what they're talking about. They're talking about the promise that they would inherit the land of Canaan, that they would possess the gates of their enemies, that those that blessed them would be blessed by God, those that cursed them would be cursed by God, that their descendants would become as the stars and the seas, and that through the seed of Abraham, all the earth would be blessed, all the nations, all the families of the earth would be blessed. Those are the promises. Now, some of those promises, like the first one, included you're going to have a descendant, you're going to have a child. That came true 30 years later. He had the first kid. He had Isaac. So that promise came true right away. The next promise, through your seed, all the descendants of the earth or all the families of the earth will be blessed. According to the book of Galatians, that happened when the particular seed, Christ, came and paid for the sins not only of Israel, but for the, quote, sins of the world. People from all kindreds, tribes, tongues, and nations. So there were blessings to all the different families of the earth. That came true roughly 2,000 years after the promise was given. So here's a promise 30 years after that came true. Here's one that came true 2,000 years after. Joshua says that when the children of Israel came into the land of Israel, after they'd come out of Egypt, that they had so grown while they were in Egypt and then flourished when they were there in the promised land, that they became, quote, as the sands of the sea and as the stars of heaven. Joshua saw that as being the fulfillment of that promise. If that's true, then that promise came true roughly 600 years after God made the original promise. My point is, the whole promises to the fathers never did all get fulfilled in one lump. They were fulfilled in bits and pieces. So the promise that God would regather all the descendants of Israel, plant them in this land of Canaan, and they would never be moved again, they would possess the gates of their enemies, and they would live in peace and prosperity, I will be their God and they will be my people, that hasn't happened yet. But it doesn't matter that it hasn't happened yet, because they have always come at great gaps. See what I'm saying? First one came true 30 years after the fact. The next one 2,000 years after. So is it any big deal if the last one's 4,000 after? No, of course not. In God's economy, there is no time. He's going to keep all those promises. And one of the great arguments that the modern day church has made against the idea of the land promise ever being fulfilled for Israel is the fact that Israel is right now scattered all over the earth and they're not gathered back to their land. But that doesn't mean God won't do it. In fact, God must do it. And they say, well, it wasn't fulfilled when the other promises got fulfilled. To which I always ask, when were the other promises fulfilled? One 30 years after, one 600 years after, one 2,000 years after. What difference does it make if another one takes 4,000? It clearly doesn't make a difference. You get the picture? So the promises to the Father, first century Jews understood that those promises still existed. They understood that the land of Canaan was not wholly and completely theirs yet. They did not possess the gates of their enemies. They did not have the time of peace and prosperity that they had been promised. They weren't getting all that stuff that God had given them. They'd gotten some of it. They hadn't gotten all of it yet. And they were waiting for all of it. You got to know that, because when Paul talks about those promises, he still talks about them as being in effect. In Galatians, Paul argues that the Abrahamic covenant was in fact still in effect during the first century. So it's still in effect now because it hasn't been fulfilled yet. Now, the first promise that had to come true for any of the rest of these promises to come true was that Abraham had to have the first kid. Now, he had already had Ishmael, but he had had Ishmael by going in the tent with Hagar and working it out in the flesh so that he could in his flesh fulfill what God's word required. That becomes the type, according to the book of Galatians, that becomes the type of men trying to satisfy God by the works of the law, that they try to work it out in their own flesh and do it their own way. That God said, I'm going to do this for you and bless you, and then men go to work trying to accomplish what God promised. That's why they had to be thrown out of the camp. Ishmael and his mom couldn't stick around because they were the type of men working in their flesh to try to accomplish the promises of God. Abe goes to God and says, I love Ishmael, it's my kid. I understand that. As a dad, I understand that. He says, I love Ishmael. I wish that he could always be in front of me, and I wish that he could be the one who would get my inheritance. And God says, no, you're going to have a child. His name is gonna be Isaac. He's not yet born, but in Isaac will your seed be called. Now, that's a real important phrase, because God just made a separation and said, yeah, you got two kids, and the oldest one, by right of inheritance, ought to get the promises, the inheritance. But it's not going to go to the older one. It's going to go to the younger one, and you're going to cast off the older one. And all these promises about your seed, your descendants, your progenitor, that's all going to come through Isaac, not through Ishmael. So God right away starts electing. God right away starts dividing and saying which line he'll bless and which line he'll curse, and it's completely up to him. So he says, through Isaac your seed will be called. So then Genesis 21 starts. The Lord visited Sarah, as he said he would. And the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived, she bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. God said exactly, a year from today, you're going to have a kid. Guess what? A year from that day, kid born. What a surprise. At the set time that God said, the kid arrived. So God completely controlled the events surrounding this child's birth so that they would know that it was completely of God. Abraham called the name of his son, which was born unto him, who Sarah bore to him, Isaac. God had already told him, name him Isaac. You know why he was named Isaac? Because Sarah laughed. Yeah, exactly. The angel of the Lord said to Abraham that Sarah was going to have a kid, and she was behind the tent hiding, and she laughed. And the angel heard her and said, why'd you laugh? And she said, I didn't laugh. So the angel said, when he's born, you'll call him Isaac, which means laughter. Abraham named the kid Isaac. Verse 4 says, Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now, let's talk about that circumcision for just a moment. We finished last week by saying that circumcision was, let's see how much you retained from last week, what was circumcision's relationship to the covenant God made with himself? God passed through the animals. He made the promise. He made Abraham the recipient of the everlasting covenant. Abraham did not pass through the animals. Abraham was not a participant. He was a recipient of the promises God made. And then God said, you will then circumcise yourself and all your kids after you. And do you remember what was the particular relationship of circumcision?
Okay.
Token, very good, thank you very much. Which means what?
Just a gesture in concordance with something.
That's exactly right. It's a gesture in accordance with the promise. The Bible specifically used the word token, didn't it? He said, this is a token of the promise I've made to you. It was the exact same way that God dealt with Noah. He said, I will never again curse the land with water. I'll never flood the world again. And as a token, and for the first time, he put a rainbow in the sky. And he said, as long as that rainbow is in the sky, it is a token of the covenant between me and you. Because I promise you, Noah, I'll never do that again. And that's the token. So every time there's rain and you walk outside and you see a rainbow, that's God saying, I won't use water to flood the world ever again. He's going to use fire instead. But he's not going to use water. Now, if it is a token of the covenant, did that make the covenant conditional? No, still an unconditional covenant. The covenant's going to happen no matter what. It's God's covenant. It's God's promise. God is going to keep his promise he made with himself. If no one ever circumcised themselves, God would nevertheless do it because it was a God promise. It was a promise God made with himself. It was an immutable promise that God made with God. Now, Marcos, at the end of the lesson last week, took the time to say, but what about this verse that says, any man who isn't circumcised, he's not in my covenant, he needs to be punished, he needs to be killed, he needs to be cast out, he's not part of my covenant. Doesn't that make it conditional? Well, he didn't ask, doesn't that make it conditional? But he said, what about that? And my answer back to him was, if you didn't circumcise your kid, did that stop the covenant, or did it just keep you out of it? Just kept you out of it, but the covenant kept going, right? A conditional covenant is one where God says, I'll do this if you do this. And then they don't do it, so God didn't do it. That's conditional. What?
Wasn't David's son the one that died after he was 7 days old?
died before he could be circumcised on the eighth day, David expressed that he would see him again.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, he actually said, he cannot come to me, but I will go to him. Which I think is one of the sweetest phrases in the Bible. So anyways, yes, absolutely. And Jesus and Paul are going to construct the theology of circumcision in the New Testament. We're going to get to all that. But you're not going to understand their theology of circumcision if you don't understand what circumcision was to begin with. And it's people not understanding circumcision to start with that have created all the errant theology about it that's running around out there now. Circumcision was a token of the Abrahamic covenant. So Abraham kept what God told him to do, commanded him, circumcise your kid. He circumcised the kid. Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as God had commanded him, and Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. And Sarah said, God has made me to laugh, so that all that will hear will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah should have given children suck, for I have borne a son in my old age. And as the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned, that Sarah saw that the son of Hagar the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, was mocking her. Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son. Look at verse 12. Sarah has come and said, cast out the bondwoman. This is a bad thing between us. Verse 11 said that the thing was very grievous for Abraham because he loved his son. Verse 12, God said to Abraham, don't let it be grievous in your sight because of the lad and because of the bondwoman. In all that Sarah has said to you, hearken to her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. That's a real important phrase. God starts electing and choosing which way the blessing is going to go. All that promise I made to you, it's not going to Ishmael, it's going to Isaac. Through Isaac, the seed is going to come. Through Isaac, the Messiah is going to come. Through Isaac, the promises are going to flow. But not through Ishmael, even though he's the firstborn, even though by right he should be getting it. Also, the son of the bondwoman, I will make a great nation because he is thy seed. Abraham rose up early in the morning and he sent her off. Now, chapter 22. It came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham. That means tried him, not tempted him to do evil. And he said, Abraham, and Abraham said, behold, I'm here. And he said, take your son, your only son, Isaac. Now, that's interesting language. He had two kids. But once God said, cast off Ishmael, in Isaac will your seed be called. From that point forward, God called Isaac the only son. He said, take now your son, your only son, who you love, get you to the land of Moriah, offer him for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains that I will tell thee of. Once again, God says, get up, start walking, I'll let you know when you're there. Abraham's getting used to this by now. Just start walking toward Mount Moriah, I'll let you know when you're there. Abraham rose up early in the morning, he saddled his ass, he took two of the young men with him, and Isaac his son. He got wood for the burnt offering. He rose up and he went unto the place that God had told him. And on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and he saw the place afar off. And Abraham said to his young men, you stay here with the donkey. I and the lad will go yonder. We will worship and come again to you, which was an interesting phrase. I'm in chapter 22, verse 5. That's a really interesting phrase because it implies that Abraham said to the young men, though he knew he was on his way to go sacrifice Isaac, he said, Isaac and I will be back. Me and Isaac are coming back, but I'm going to go sacrifice Isaac. Interesting language. But he knew that through Isaac, he had the promise from God, in Isaac will your seed be called. If Isaac dies, there's no more seed, there's no more promise. God lied. So Abraham, the man of faith, said, yeah, if God wants me to sacrifice Isaac, I'll sacrifice Isaac. And you know what? Me and Isaac will come back. Because in Isaac, my entire destiny is in Isaac. The seed is in Isaac. Everything else that happens to me is through Isaac. Verse 6, so Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering. He laid it on Isaac, his son. He took the fire in his hand and the knife, and they both went together. And Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, my father. He said, here I am, my son. And he said, behold, here's wood and here's fire, but where's the lamb? We seem to have forgotten something. We got the wood, we got the fire, you got the knife. Everything's copacetic so far. We seem to have forgotten the sacrifice. And Abraham said, my son, God will provide himself a lamb for the burnt offering. So the both of them went together. Now that's an interesting bit of language too. Because it can be taken two ways. Either it's saying God will provide a lamb, which we will use, or God will provide himself as a lamb, which we will use. That's why when Christ came and was killed, he was the Passover lamb of God. He was the lamb that God provided as a sacrifice. So Abraham said, don't worry, son, God will provide himself a lamb. Verse 9 says, Genesis 22:9, they came to the place which God had told him of. And Abraham built an altar there, and he laid the wood in order, and he bound up Isaac his son, and he laid him on the altar upon the wood, and Abraham stretched forth his hand, and he took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called it to him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. And he said, lay not your hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son. And Abraham lifted up his eyes, and he looked, and behold, behind him there was a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. You get that picture? There's a ram with thorns around his head. That's something. He looks, and there's a ram with his head in thorns. And Abraham went, and he took the ram and offered it as a burnt offering instead of his son. And there's the gospel. His son was delivered because the lamb died. The lamb who had a head full of thorns was sacrificed for God while the angel of God was there watching. And as a consequence, Isaac's free. Isaac's free. Isaac's free. Because in Isaac, the seed of Abraham is called the children of the free. That's the language that the book of Galatians uses. Calls Ishmael the child of bondage because he was born to a slave woman. But says, we're the free ones because the lamb died in our place. Well, we're not even 22 chapters into the book of Genesis, and the gospel's just being preached all over the place. Which, by the way, the fact that Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and there was the lamb, means that it wasn't there when they went up there, which I find kind of interesting. That they went up there, they built the altar, they got the wood, they built the fire's burning, the knife is raised. The boy is good as dead when God says, hold it, don't do that. And Abraham looks up again, and right in front of him, there's a ram caught in a thicket. Whew. The sovereignty of God? God made sure that a ram got up there and got his horns caught in a thicket. It's amazing. So, verse 14, Abraham called the place Jehovah Jireh, which is one of the seven Jehovah names in the Old Testament. As it is said, in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen, and the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven a second time. Now watch this. He's going to repeat the Abrahamic covenant, and look what he uses as a basis for it. Watch this, because if anybody ever wants to tell you that the Abrahamic covenant is a conditional covenant, and therefore done away with because somehow Israel didn't keep their end of the covenant, this is the verse that does away with that thinking altogether. Watch this. God said, by myself have I sworn. To begin with, it was God swearing by himself, right? The two images that went through the severed animals were God and God. The book of Hebrews says, by two immutable things by which it is impossible for God to lie, he made this promise. God now says, by myself I have sworn, said the Lord, for because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, then in blessing I will bless you, in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven and as the sands which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. Now, if there was a condition, Abraham just fulfilled it. You get that? If there was a condition, God just said, because you did this, I'm going to do this. I swore it by myself, and then you did what I told you to do. You circumcised the boy and got ready to sacrifice him. And because you did it, I'm going to do everything else. So if there was ever a condition, that was as close as a condition as there ever was, and Abraham kept the condition. Get the picture? Absolutely. He fulfilled the condition by faith? Absolutely. Now, what other condition is there in the Abrahamic covenant? None. So then, is God required to keep every whit of that promise? Sure. Sure. Is it a physical promise? I'm going to give your descendants this land. How physical is that? Well, then doesn't he need to keep it physically? Doesn't he need to actually gather those people to that land to keep that promise? Yeah, it's not enough to say, well, everybody who had faith like Abraham will be gathered into heaven, and that's the fulfillment of that promise, which is the very popularly touted explanation for why or how God kept that promise. That when he spoke of the land, he didn't mean the land, he meant heaven. And when he spoke of Israel, he didn't mean Israel, he meant the church. And when the church gets to heaven, that's the fulfillment of the land promised to Abraham. That can't be right. But look, he repeated the same Abrahamic promise and said, you did it, I'm going to do it, it's an absolute now. So Abraham went back. Sarah, in chapter 23, Sarah dies. In chapter 24, Isaac marries Rebecca. Look at chapter 22, starting at verse 15. God's going to talk to Abraham again. Abraham happens to be at Ephron at this moment. He's gone there because Sarah has died. God is...
Chapter 23, 15.
You said 22. You said 22:15.
What I meant was 26, so it's okay. I am at 26, and it's not a 15. It's 1 to 5, but I couldn't see my dash. I'm sorry. I make these notes very fast.
All right.
So Isaac has married Rebecca. In chapter 25, Abraham dies. Once Abraham is dead, Ishmael's family is cited from verse 12 on. Isaac has twin boys. You know this story, right? Isaac and Rebecca have two twins. Remember the names?
Jacob and Esau.
Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. Exactly. Who was the first one born?
Esau.
Esau was born first. So he should have the right of inheritance. The promises that were passed down. Let me first show you that the promises were passed down. Let's start there. Let me just establish one more thing. 26, starting at verse 1. There was a famine in the land, besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. Isaac went unto Abimelech, the king of the Philistines, in Gerar. In verse 2, for the seventh time in 26 chapters so far, and actually the story of Abraham didn't start until 12. So in 14 chapters, for the seventh time, God is going to repeat this unconditional promise. How serious is he about this promise? This is the seventh time. We're going to see it now. The Lord appeared unto Isaac and said to him, go not down into Egypt. Instead, dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee. I will bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all the countries. And I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father. And I will make your seed to multiply as the stars of heaven. And I will give unto thy seed all these countries. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws, and Isaac dwelt there in Gerar. Now, God has himself passed down the Abrahamic promise to Isaac and spoke it piece for piece to Isaac and said, now it's all yours. And the reason it's yours is because of Abraham your father. So was there any condition on Isaac?
No.
It was given to Isaac because of what Abraham did. Are you getting a feel for this yet? I know I'm beating this to death, but nobody in the church seems to understand this, so I'm just pounding at it. When it was given to Isaac, it was given to Isaac because he was the chosen seed by God, because he was the promised child of the free by God, and he got the promise, though he was the younger, though Ishmael was cast off, he was given the promise word for word by God himself on the basis of the finished thing that Abraham had done. Okay? God still didn't add any conditions. He and Rebekah have two kids, Jacob and Esau. God told Rebekah before the kids were born, he said, there are two nations in your womb. the elder is going to serve the younger. So before they were even born, Rebekah was told that the younger one was the one that God was going to bless. Starting to get a feel for this, that God constantly keeps choosing the younger one. He's taking the older one who should get the promise and saying no and choosing the younger one. Which, by the way, I'll tell you now, is the type of the old covenant being superseded by the new covenant. That the youngest covenant is the superior covenant that God blesses. That typology is all the way through the Old Testament, so that it shouldn't have been a surprise to the Jews when they saw it in the New Testament. In any case, God tells Rebekah that the elder is going to serve the younger, and for that reason she has always preferred the younger, which is Jacob. When the kids are born, Esau comes out first, and he's red-colored. He's all reddish, so he's named Esau, which means red. Yeah, exactly. He's born. This is a great way to name kids. If that's the way we still named kids, James would have been named Pointy Head. So, little lizard-looking Pointy Head would have been his name. Esau came out, he's all red, so they name him Esau, which means red. He is the progenitor of the Edomites. Later on, you'll hear about the wars between the descendants of Israel and the Edomites. That's one of their biggest problems, are the Edomites, who get together, by the way, with the Canaanites. And the Canaanites and the Edomites gang up against the Israelites. And it's still happening over there right now. So, one day, Esau has been out. Rather than read this to you, I'm just going to tell you the story, because you know the story, but it matters. One day, Esau's out hunting. He's a great hunter. He's been out for many days, and he comes back in from his hunting, and he's just parched. He's just tired. And he sees Jacob, who has stayed home, and he has, and Jacob, by the way, watches the sheep, which I think is an interesting little bit of typology there, too. He's a shepherd. And in walks Esau, and he's real hungry, and sees his brother, who has a, quote, mess of pottage, which I just find really funny. He had some pottage, he had some soup, he had some lentils, he had some stuff to eat. And Esau walks up to him and says, I'm famished, I'm going to die if I don't eat, let me have your pottage, let me have what you're eating. Jacob basically says to him, well, what's it worth to you? And he says, well, what good is it if I die? Doesn't matter what I have, when I die, it does me no good. So you can have my birthright, just give me something to eat. So he says, deal, gives him something to eat, and says, I get your birthright, right? Well, exactly like God had said, predicted to his mom before the two kids were born, that the elder would serve the younger, and there he, of his own free will, did exactly what God said was going to happen. So he gave up his birthright to his brother for a mess of pottage. In the New Testament, in the book of Hebrews, that was called a profane act. He said, don't be as that profane person Esau who sold his birthright for a mess of pottage. He sold the spiritual benefit for earthly, fleshly satisfaction. And God called that profane. We like to use the word profanity for dirty words. Profane means not being able to discern the things of God. That's true profanity. So the profane person Esau sold his birthright. Well, he goes in to see his dad and he says, Dad, this is interesting. He says, Dad, I'm around since I'm here. Maybe we could get that birthright thing out of the way. Well, if his father had sat up in bed, who was dying at the time, if Isaac had said, yes, it's time to give you your birthright, which is yours by desert, then the whole plan of God would have been messed up. So instead, the old man sits up and says, you know what I'd really like? Veal. Veal sounds good to me. A little veal would be nice right about now. So he says, I'll go get you some veal. I'll be back. He goes hunting for veal. While he's out, Mom and Jacob make a deal and say, look, you need to go in there and get the birthright from his father. He's dying, and he's prepared to hand away the birthright. You need to make yourself look and smell like your brother, because your dad's so blind, he won't know the difference. But if you don't smell like your brother, and if you don't feel like your brother, he's going to know you're not your brother, because he's a hairy man, and he works out in the fields and stuff. You're more of an indoor guy, and you're very smooth. So they take some lamb's wool and put it on the back of his hand so that he feels hairy. And then his mom makes up the veal exactly the way Dad likes it. The seethed venison that he really loves. And in he walks, pretending to be his brother, and says, here, I've brought you the veal. I would like my blessing now, please. And the old man sits up and eats it and goes, oh, yeah, that's exactly what I asked for. And then he says, come close. Come close, I can't see you. And he says, the voice sounds a bit like Jacob. Come here. So he comes closer and says, give me your hand. And he feels the back of his hand and he says, oh, but you're hairy like Esau. And then he says, let me smell of you. And he's wearing Esau's clothes. And he says, yeah, you smell like Esau. He says, okay, you must be Esau. And he gives him the blessing. I'm in chapter 27. Starting, I was going to start at 15, because Rebekah took the goodly raiment of her son Esau with her into the house, and she put him upon Jacob, her younger son. She took the skin from the kids and goats and put it on his hands and on the smooth of his neck. She made the savory meat and the bread that she had prepared, and she put it in the hands of Jacob. He came to his father and said, my father, and he said, here I am. What is it, my son? And Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done according as you bade me. Arise, sit, eat, that thy soul may bless me. Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have found it so quickly? He said, because the Lord thy God brought it to me. Oh, he's lying, lying, lying. Jacob, the heel catcher, which, by the way, is what Jacob means. It means heel catcher. I guess I didn't tell you that. When the first kid was born, when Esau was born, he had a hold of his brother's heel. So the first kid was born head first, naturally. And as the heel came out, there was a hand holding onto the heel, fighting to be born. Remember, God said to her, there's two nations and they're fighting for dominance, fighting in your womb. And when the first one was born, the second one was clinging. So they took the second one out and named him heel catcher, supplanter, Jacob. Here he is lying to his own dad. Oh, God delivered it. That's how I did it so fast. Ooh, this must be of God. Hurry up, bless me. So anyway, verse 26. So his father Isaac said, come now, kiss me, my son. He came near, he kissed him. He smelled the smell of his raiment, and he blessed him and said, see, the smell of my son is the smell of the field, which the Lord has blessed. Therefore, God, give thee the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of the corn and the wine. Let people serve thee and nations bow down before thee. Be Lord over your brethren and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed is everyone who curses thee. Blessed is everyone that blesses thee. And it came to pass as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, that Jacob was yet scarce gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from hunting. Now Esau's going to go into his dad and say, okay, here's your venison, bless me. And he's going to say, I've been tricked. It's too late. I gave the blessing away and I can't backtrack. The blessing he just gave was the Abrahamic blessing. Those who curse you, be cursed of God. Those that bless you, be blessed of God. You'll get the fat of the land. Your brethren will all bow down to you. You will be the primary one. So Jacob ran away from Esau because he was so afraid that he was going to take his life. I'm going to end with this, but look at chapter 28. It's no good if only the father hands down the blessing. God is now going to verify that the blessing has moved down to Jacob. Watch this. Chapter 28, verse 10. Jacob went out from Beersheba, and he went on to Haran. He lighted or stopped upon a certain place. He stayed there all night because the sun was set. He took stones from that place, and he put them up for pillows, and he laid his head there as a place to sleep. And he dreamed, and behold, there was a ladder set up to earth, set up on the earth. It reached on its top. It reached to heaven. Behold, there were angels ascending and descending on the ladder. And behold, the Lord stood above the ladder. And he said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, your father. And I am the God of Isaac, and the land wherein you now lie, to thee will I give it and to thy seed. Does that sound familiar? God is now handing down the Abrahamic promise to Jacob. Behold, the Lord stood above, verse 14, thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth. This is the eighth time this promise is being quoted by God. And we're only 28 chapters into the book of Genesis. For the eighth time, God is quoting it verbatim. Now he's handed it down to the next one. Thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth. Thou shalt spread forth to the west and the east and the north and the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and I will keep thee in all the places where you go. And I will bring you again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done all that which I have spoken to thee of. Now wait a minute. God just said right there that he would not leave Israel till he had done everything he promised to do, which was to scatter them to the north, south, east, and west, and then regather them to that very land.
That has not happened.
And that has not happened yet. Has he left Israel? He said, I will not leave you. promised him, I will not leave you till I've done all that. And yet the church today is saying God has abandoned Israel. They're wrong. Jacob woke up out of his sleep and he said, surely the Lord is in this place and I didn't know it. And he was afraid and he said, how dreadful is this place? This is none other but the house of God. And this is the gate to heaven. And Jacob rose up early in the morning. He took a stone, the one that he had made for a pillow, and he set it up as a pillar, and he poured oil on top of it, and he named that place Beth-El, the house of God. But the first name of it was called Luz. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me, I will keep me in this way that I go, and I will get me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that when I come to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And he put a stone there, and he set it for a pillar, and this shall be God's house, and of all that he shall give me, I will surely give a tenth back to him. So, I'm going to stop there with this conclusion. The Abrahamic promise was unconditional. If there were ever a condition to it, Abraham kept that condition. It was passed down from Abraham to Isaac, and when God promised it to Isaac, verbatim, word for word, he said, I'm giving it to you because of what Abraham has already done. So if there ever were a condition, the condition is taken care of. There was no condition put on Isaac. Isaac was the younger. He had two kids. His younger, who is Jacob, got the blessing directly from God. And the Lord said to him the exact same Abrahamic promise and said, I'm the God that gave this promise to Abraham, your father. I'm the one that gave it to Isaac, your father. And now I'm giving it to you, Jacob. It is your promise now. No conditions. It's just simply yours. Now, who's this guy Jacob going to become?
Israel.
His name is going to be changed to Israel. Prince that has power with God. He's going to have 12 sons. Those 12 sons are going to be the 12 tribes of Israel. And guess what? The promise stays with them. That's pretty specific. Next week I'll show you specifically where the promise goes.
Beginning, though, you don't hear about Jews, and the Jews don't even start off.
There are no Jews here yet. There's only Hebrews.
So. I mean, that
there are no Israelites yet, by the way. The nation of Israel doesn't exist until the 12 kids are born. There's no Israel, there's no Jews here. There are just descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's all there is. And there are blessed descendants and cast-off descendants. Get the picture?
Yeah. Huh? Why there won't be no peace?
That's why there won't be any peace. Until when?
Till
the Prince of Peace comes. When the Prince of Peace comes, he's going to come and establish the Abrahamic covenant with the Israelites who still retain the covenant. And then they're going to have the 1,000 years of peace and prosperity they've been promised from the beginning of the book of Genesis. And when they get their 1,000 years of peace and prosperity, they will possess the gates of their enemy. They will possess all that land that was promised to them. And David, their prince, will finally reign on the throne. And Christ, the Prince of Peace, will reign over all. And we, the Church of the Gentiles, will rule and reign with him. Getting the big picture? See how the whole book fits together? It's this great big amalgamous puzzle? Amalgamous puzzle. Thank you very much. It all fits together. It's an amalgam. It's God that's the glue that holds it all together. And the same Spirit of God that promised that stuff to Abraham is the same Spirit of God who will fulfill it in time and in eternity. You get all that? Now, until you get all that the promise was made 4,000 years ago and will be fulfilled out in the future, only then can you see where the church fits in.
This is the
90s. This is the 90s. All that doesn't count, exactly.
It's all spiritual.
When we get to Romans, Paul's going to tell you how the church fits into all that. But that's why you need to know what the all that is. Next week, hopefully, we'll do the 12 tribes. And past that, we'll go back to Romans. I think you're getting a good feel for this. We'll define some, we'll create some definitions next week, some language, because Paul's going to use that language. We'll talk about what that means.